Welcome to another episode of Visual Learner, my podcast. I'm Harland, if you didn't know that. If you're here because the algorithm, I guess, fed you this video, hey, how you doing? What's up? You can't respond to me. Unless you're watching this on YouTube, then you can leave comments, and you should do that. But only nice ones. Them's the rules. How's everybody doing? Got another busy week of stuff that happened that I want to talk about. First I want to say, I know this is like the second video in a row that I've done where I'm just in my room. For anybody that watches my YouTube channel, I usually film in my garage, and people have created an affinity for all the junk that's in there. So there's another video without the spare door or pole saw, which people miss dearly. And just to be very clear, for my YouTube audience, this is a podcast. This is a different thing altogether. That being said, I am moving soon. Aw, sound effect. And I don't know if I'm going to record another video on the podcast before that happens at the end of this month. I have a couple other episodes or videos that I want to do that I'm probably just going to do right here. So if people want another video really, really badly and to say, I don't know, farewell to to spare door and pole saw, I'll try and write something, but I just have a lot of stuff on my plate right now. More so mentally than anything else. Just like trying to compartmentalize the logistics of moving, like to mentally prepare myself, has been a lot because I'm sure it's a form of anxiety that I have where, I ruminate on things that aren't going to happen for another 25 days. So every night I try and go to sleep, I find the wheels just a spinning of, okay, what do I pack up first? When do I buy boxes? That whole thing, right? So anybody else, huh? Anybody relate? So yeah, I'm moving. Yeah, I'm not going to be in this shitty less than one bedroom in-law unit. My rent is going to go up by about $1,000 though, but it's all in service of peace of mind. I will have a legitimate one bedroom apartment. And I am moving from San Francisco to Oakland. So that's exciting, but it's a lot. And yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll make merch of like spare door and pole saw or something. I'll sell some prints of the photo of the garage, the old space. So that's going on. God, I apologize. I don't know why I'm so phlegmy today. Speaking of YouTube and content and things, we're headed into like Adpocalypse 3.0. It's crazy. So much for the open internet, everybody. You got to show ID like it's a bar to get in to access anything. Some people probably saw the news about like the UK implementing their Internet Protection Act or whatever it is. And, you know, there's been talk of that sort of thing here, and certain websites already have you do it for, you know, like OnlyFans or whatever, for obvious reasons. But now it's like, I don't know, they're testing the waters for most places like Spotify. Why does Spotify need to see have your biometric data and your fucking government issue ID to listen to some music? It's crazy. It's like the 90s when the parental advisory stickers got slapped on albums. because a bunch of pearl clutching whites thought that it would prevent children from, you know, listening to or buying quote unquote explicit music. It didn't. Fucking people that ran those stores, like, I bought explicit content CDs from, you know, Sam Goody or whatever the fuck, and nobody gave a shit. Nobody ID'd me ever. Not once. It's a little different, obviously, with the internet, because they can just, like, prevent you, block you from using the website, but that also hasn't ever really stopped people. The UK, people were using images of Norman Reedus from Death Stranding to get around the, you know, age verification thing, because it just uses AI to guess how old you are. Like, you could just, I feel like you could get Facetune, right? And take a photo of yourself if you're like 13 years old, Facetune it to look, make you look, you know, 10 years older, and that would probably work. Or just generate an AI face of just a random person too. Like, the whole thing's so stupid and silly. It's frustrating too, because it's all under the guise of, like, protect the children. We've got to protect the children. While there's a literal pedophile in the presidency, that's crazy. Rules for thee, but not for me. So, I mean, the protect the children thing is always just an excuse to erode our digital privacy or our any autonomy, whether it's digital or, you know, corporeal. These people don't give a fuck about children. They just don't. And this stuff always ends with, like, kids being exploited more, because now you have more information on these vulnerable people, underage people, floating around on the internet that some fucking creep or edgelord will hack and then use to dox people and spread it around. It just happened. This thing, just happened with the T app. If anybody is familiar with the T app, where women could basically go talk to each other about men they'd, you know, gone on dates with and essentially rate their experience and whether or not he's, you know, got the ick or red flags, or there were legitimate things to be concerned about because this man was a psycho. And the website was, like, completely, or, like, the data for the users was completely unprotected. Some people poked around and found that there was a URL, a public URL, where all of that information was stored. And then they, like, you know, spread it around. And then somebody else took all that, the user photos and information, made another website where the awful, you know, the edgelord guys I was just talking about made a separate rating app of website, whatever, of the people, of the women from the T app. So this stuff coming to YouTube is not going to make the website any better. you know, they started cracking down on AI trailer channels, and now they're cracking down on faceless YouTube channels that are heavily, you know, AI generated, you know, use stuff. I think Drew Gooden maybe just did a video on this, or Danny Gonzalez. I can't remember which one. Or who was it? Now I don't even know. Oh, it was Jarvis. Jarvis Johnson did a whole video on, like, the faceless AI channels. And so, I mean, there's a shitload of them and they need to do something about it. But, like, I don't know that the way they're going about it is the right way, or if age verification is sort of an offshoot of that initiative, it just seems like a bad idea. In general, paywalling the whole internet, unless you show photo ID, just creates, you know, two separate internets, right? You've got the one with all the people that gave up all this data, you know, whether they don't give a shit or they like had to for like their job or whatever it might be, which is just, it's no one who, if you have fewer people on the safe internet, that means you're going to have fewer creators on that safe internet, right? Like, that's the thing I don't really fully understand, because for people who the other internet just becomes a darker, worse hellhole. You know, you've got like Tor and I don't know, man. This happens every time where they try to regulate like safe stuff, and you just inadvertently create a separate ecosystem that is just so much worse, right? You try and regulate like the sex work industry, right? And you end up with people who want to do stuff off the books and like just more depraved things. You try and regulate women's bodies, which has happened in the past with, you know, the pro-lifer weirdos who want to outlaw abortions. Okay, what is that? That just makes women who need abortions go and get bad abortions from people who don't know what the fuck they're doing, maybe, and might kill you. Oopsie, because it's not happening in a doctor's office. It's happening at a vet. So get ready for that. That's coming soon. I don't know if this is, there's a segue here, but speaking of the government doing dumb shit, I'm sure some of you probably saw Trump's paving over the Rose Garden. And it just looks so bad. It looks like the yard at a white collar prison. Like it reminds me of like the before and after photos, when a country goes through like a religious regime change. It's just somebody went into the Rose Garden and just put a bunch of pavers down, a bunch of cement pavers. It looks like what your retired dad would do as like a weekend project and just go buy, you know, 60 pavers and put them down. Be like, grass is too much water, which like legit, that's a reason. But just put clover down instead. Right? Why do we need to put a bunch of, you know, 3x3 pavers in the Rose Garden? How did that make it better? Because it ended up looking like a liminal wedding venue or the world's nicest dollar store parking lot. It's so dumb looking. And like, I get that, you know, worrying about what they did to Jackie Kennedy's Rose Garden is not the biggest issue in the world right now. You know, there are things that are happening policy-wise that we need to all be way more mindful of. But the reason that this stuff kind of gets talked about and why I think it's interesting is, you know, you have all of these policy things and laws and bills and acts that come out that are, you know, sometimes hundreds of pages that the average person can't or doesn't have the time to fully comprehend or fucking read through on their, you know, 30-minute commute to work or whatever. And so we don't have like a full grasp of the inner workings, most people, I don't think. And it's hard to explore the nuance of that. What's not hard to understand and comprehend is the physical representation or manifestation of those policies, which is this. This is the perfect example of that. Destroying a historic, somewhat historic, it's not a landmark, but, you know, this thing that's very well known in the White House. Because we can look at that and be like, oh, those are that's the result of this administration, right? And these policymakers. And I mean, it's not just the Rose Garden either. It's like they're going to spend, what, $300 million or whatever it is to build a ballroom. Announced the same day, I believe, that the jobs report was revised from, you know, a couple hundred thousand new created jobs to like 10,000. So that's a kick in the balls, huh? But it just kind of signals like how Trump specifically in this administration views the presidency, because he doesn't view it as him as like a steward of that seat, right? He views it as he is that seat. He is that position. He is the presidency. Rather than being somebody who's just living in the White House short term, you know, and most of this stuff, like you can't, in the past, bulldozing or building a new facility typically, as far as I understand, has to get congressional approval. Whether it's, you know, a new FBI building or renovating the Rose Garden, the lawn, and turning it into a solar powered pizza oven for 200 white people. Like, you know, it's just the lack of going through the right, doing it the right way, or at least what the precedent is, just kind of proves that, like, yeah, he'll do whatever the fuck he wants because he thinks he owns the thing. He does not believe that he works for the people, for the taxpayers. And that's how, like, regime changes start, right? Which is ironic why, again, it looks like the before and after of a fucking country going through a regime change. Where they take down all the, you know, past administrations' landmarks and statues and creative endeavors. I mean, the fact that the John F. Kennedy Center for Arts or whatever? The fact that they haven't torn that place down. they're gonna rename it to the Roseanne Barr Center for Performing Arts. Well, speaking about white people, huh? It's probably the best transition I'm going to get out of that, is the Sydney Sweeney jeans, guys. I mean, now, look, do I think it's the biggest issue, similar to the Rose Garden? Not really. But enough people have talked about it that I, you know, almost have formed opinions against my will. And this podcast, after all, is a lot like a diary. I got to get it off my chest. Otherwise, it's going to eat a hole in my brain. And like, I'm more fascinated, I think, by the marketing of it all, as opposed to like the white supremacy angle, because there is like a part of me, well, I think they kind of doubled down on the whole thing. But initially when I saw it, there was a part of me that was like, well, look, could it be that, you know, a team of people sat in a room and were throwing shit at the wall and, you know, did not think of the double entendre that's there, right? Could that be a possibility? Absolutely. How many times have we seen that in the past where a brand has a, let's say, misfire, right? Doesn't understand either the logo. Maybe the logo accidentally, oops, looks like a dick. We missed it. How did we miss that it looks like a dick? How did we miss that this is a white supremacist dog whistle? Like, it's happened. It's not out of the realm of possibility for this thing to happen, right? It could have been made with good intentions. You know, it's not like they're like an anti-DEI company. They have on their website, or did at one point, you know, their DEI initiatives, you know, their LGBTQ causes when Pride happens, you know, the places that they donate for, you know, suicide prevention, stuff like that. Like, I don't know if that's changed in the last 6 months. I didn't even know that American Eagle was still a brand until this whole thing happened. I don't know the last time that I've thought about American Eagle. Which is why some of this feels really manufactured, the outrage. Because who the fuck, who's a ride or die American Eagle fan? What? Huh? That being said, doubling down and whatever the fuck else, I kind of stopped paying attention because it's such a non-issue. You know, like, is it going to turn someone into a Nazi who wasn't before? No. Does it embolden white supremacists and Nazis to, I don't know, buy more American Eagle jeans and comment a bunch of dumb shit on Instagram and YouTube? Yeah. But, like, that's all they've got. You know what I mean? Like, okay. Go shout into a void amongst a bunch of your other Nazi sympathizers and collaborators. I think it's more being used as a distraction from actual systemic issues. And I think a lot of it is brought on by, again, like the media doing their little fucking think pieces to obfuscate from the whole Epstein thing. But what I think is more interesting is Sydney Sweeney as a spokesperson for brands right now, and her as a brand. Like, I'm a marketing guy. I've talked about that. I find this stuff fascinating. And, you know, she's doing all of these. Before this, it was like the Dr. Squatch bathwater thing. And then I guess she was like a spokesperson for Tory Burch, which is like some of the most basic women's wear that's out there. Because she used to be doing like stuff for Miu Miu. Like, and now Dr. Squatch? What is that? I'm talking shit on Dr. Squatch because they're essentially just a dropship company. They don't make their own soap. They buy it from another manufacturer, slap it on. I mean, that's how a lot of brands like Dr. Squatch exist, so I get it. But it's just, they're buying it in bulk from some fucking soap manufacturer. And then just, yeah, what, how, where the fuck did they get the money to hire Sydney Sweeney? American Eagle makes sense that they would have all this money. But what is Dr. Squatch doing? How many millions of dollars did they pay her? So anyway, it's just, to me, it's a weird, confused kind of rebrand. And I don't know if it's because... So, okay, this is the thing with Sydney Sweeney, right? She got famous for Euphoria, which was a pretty edgy, scandalous, artsy, I don't know. I watched one episode and was like, this reminds me too much of what it was like to be an actual addict. I'm good. But started in like what was relatively provocative or artsy, for lack of a better word, right, in Euphoria. And then she did like that movie Immaculate, which is, from what I understand, is about like women's bodily autonomy, kind of. That's the underlying theme. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, now she's in Dr. Squatch ads and Tory Burch ads, and she's doing these like mid rom-coms and bafflingly bad spider web, Spider-Verse, Madam Web shit. Like it feels like she went from kind of being in the same realm as what like Zendaya was trying to do, although she's also in like Spider-Man and shit, or like a Hunter Schafer, and really watering down her persona in order to make a bunch of money. And I think the reason she started doing these fucking I'm a sexy bombshell ads is because she also, she's coming out, there's a fucking like A24 adjacent boxing movie where she plays like a lesbian boxer. So to me, it feels like that role is the farthest thing she's done so far in her acting career. It's like her, she's trying to do like the wrestler, like Mickey Rourke's The Wrestler, or whatever. Hey, also, what the fuck is up with all these wrestling and boxing art house movies? There was The Wrestler, however, like 2 decades ago. And then we got The Iron Claw. And then there's also the Rocky, I mean, his name, it's not Rocky, the movie, but The Rock is playing a wrestler, and all the promotional stuff looks like it's an A20. Is it an A24 movie? It might be an A24 movie. And now Sydney Sweeney's doing one of these like fucking wrestling boxing movies. What the fuck is with those? Why do people, I don't understand why there are so many of these kinds of movies. The Rock wrestling movie? Yeah, The Smashing Machine. Oh, it's an MMA. Oh, I'm sorry. It's an MMA movie. Oops. It's about Mark Kerr. Anyway. So she's doing this movie at some point that's coming out. And I have a feeling that in order to kind of, either she's uncomfortable or not fully accepted that role, looking not hot, if you've seen like the one behind the scenes photo that's gone around, she's like making up for it by going back to, here's my tits, fellas. I am so fast interested to see what the reception after all of this booking. Sydney Sweeney just killed the woke movement with her big jugs crowd thinks when this lesbian boxing movie comes out. Are they still going to support her, or are they going to call it woke trash? Probably going to call it woke trash. What was I talking about? Yeah, I don't know. It's that, or it's like her sort of, I don't know, playing both sides of the fence a little bit. I mean, she went to like fucking Jeff Bezos's wedding. Like, she's clearly trying to cozy up to a political leaning that is en vogue right now, right? It is the right wing is in control of this country. No ifs, ands, or buts, baby. And you've seen it with like companies cozying up next to Trump, all of those CEOs that were at the inauguration, because they know that he won't give a shit about deregulation or policy enforcement or enforcing laws if you give him money. So you have all these people and companies catering to this, you know, right-wing sentiment, which is sort of, you know, leans into some of these eugenicist, white supremacist dog whistles, like in an American Eagle ad, maybe. I don't know. Could be. It's just our everything right now is just so stupid. It's just so dumb, dude, because it's such a non-issue. Because again, who the fuck gave a shit about American Eagle? I mean, in that regard, did it create that lack of interest that I perceived? Like, did it fix their reputation? Yeah, if you go to their Instagram account and you look at the views on the Sydney Sweeney reels that they've posted about her good genes, they're all like, you know, multiple millions of views, whereas every other post is like, you know, 60,000, 100,000. So yeah, it did the thing they wanted it to do, but at what cost? Sydney Sweeney's got good genes. There was also a Dye Workwear actually talked about this, and it's also kind of funny that that the people who are all about like US made, American manufacturing, bring jobs back to the States are the same people who are buying, who got duped by a pair of knockers to buy jeans that are not made in America. But Dye Workwear posted a big long thread about all of this whole thing in regard to like, you know, denim manufacturing and American manufacturing, which I think is a good read. You should go follow him on, I think he stopped posting so much on Twitter. I think he made he said something, I think recently, where he was like, I'm going to be posting on Threads more. So, go check that out. If you're interested in, you know, menswear fashion, how this stuff is made, I personally am, it's actually what one of my next videos I want to talk about is, total fucking tangent, but the next two videos, because I don't have the mental capacity to sit down and write anything, I'm going to try my hand at a couple react videos where I look at a couple of characters on the internet, and one of them is a fashion guy. Well, there's a couple of like fashion guys online that I think are interesting and funny that I'm going to try my hand at that. Because I just don't have, there's too much going on up here, man. So I hope you're okay with that. I have to push myself, right? I have to try and evolve and do something different. What an insane tangent. What else do we have going on? Let's see. Speaking of creating, making stuff, create influencers, there's nothing. I'm forcing a transition now. It's been like over a week now since this, but I kind of wanted to, I don't know, address it, if for no other reason than to just lead into something that's that's better, which is Alex Peter, or LOL Overruled Online. I don't know how online my audience is, so I'm just going to assume that everybody knows who... I shouldn't do that, because there might be people who have no fucking idea what I'm talking about. I think I've referenced this creator in the past in some of my other videos, and LOL Overruled. He's a New York-based public defender. Started following him on TikTok several years ago during like the, you know, late stage pandemic, like 2022 or something maybe. And, you know, his early content was all basically just kind of talking about what his job is and what it's like to be a public defender in New York. You know, he had some leftist ideas, he talked a lot about like being frustrated with the system, et cetera, et cetera. So recently, last week or whatever, there were people that came out that said he was a sex pest. Surprise, surprise. obviously, I hope that all of the people that he affected are getting the care and support that they need. I don't want to diminish what he did or said to them. Nor do I really want to speculate on anything I don't know about. I don't know this guy, right? But I've talked about like Cody Ko in the past. I've talked about Seth Rogen being, or Seth Rogen, not Seth. No, Seth Rogen seems like a good guy. Who's the other guy? Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill, that whole thing that happened many years ago. So, like, I've talked about this stuff in the past, and I feel like it would be weird if I didn't at least mention it. Voice my own thoughts on the situation. From what I understand, he would, like, slide into people's DMs on Instagram mainly and demand, like, nudes and stuff from them. I saw a few screenshots, but I didn't want to, I don't know. It's just depressing and, like, shitty when you see this stuff happen, because a lot of creators who did know him were saying, you know, like, how disappointed they were, and valid, right? Because they had him on, like, their stream, or they did collaboration videos with them on YouTube. And by all accounts, he seemed like a decent guy with okay takes. You know, I saw him on TikTok and seemed fairly like that's where he existed. And then I started seeing him show up on like Hassan's stream, where he did videos with Jarvis Johnson. Second shout out to Jarvis Johnson. and I remember I reposted something he had shared, like maybe like a thumbnail or a clip or something. And I just thought it was supposed to be like a silly joke of like seeing Lol overruled go from, you know, TikTok guy to legitimate, I don't know, like content creator, influencer or something, was like kind of fun to see that, like that, see that transition happen. Right. And he like replied or reposted, shared the story I made where he was like, I'm not doing that, but like a little quippy thing. That was the only interaction I ever had with him. One of the things I did see, or, you know, because he made a post regarding the allegations, which was not good, the apology he posted. And there was somebody else who brought up an old Substack article where he basically was condemning all the things it turned out he was actually doing, probably at the same time that he wrote that Substack article. And a lot of it feels like some self-sabotage, you know. He clearly knew what he was doing was wrong, and went and did it anyway. Again, I started this whole thing to be like, I wanted to bring this up so I could talk about somebody who I believe is a good person, a good guy, that you should go follow and pay attention to and give their flowers to. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure a lot of my audience is probably like, what's it called? When you're like a fan of something, you're probably like subscribed to Dropout, and you know about Dropout, the streaming platform, used to be College Humor. And they have multiple shows. One of the shows is called Game Changer, where every episode is a different game that the players have to figure out what the rules are in order to win it, right? Their penultimate episode is basically it was basically Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but it was built for one specific cast member, and he didn't know that when they started playing. And that cast member's name is Jacob Wysocki. He has been on Dropout multiple times now. He's relatively new, sort of like cast member. But he's become like a fan favorite since his like first appearance on, I think it might have been Game Changer, from, I don't know, however many years ago now. And so on this episode, the whole game is rigged so that he cannot lose. It involves all of his close friends and collaborators, and it ended up where he won $100,000 because they got a sponsorship from LinkedIn. That basically LinkedIn paid him $100,000 to win. And it was integrated with like basically like a mid-roll ad reads in the episode for LinkedIn. And he absolutely deserved it. I watched that episode and I cried. Because at the end, when he wins, he gives a big long, not long, but he gives this heartfelt speech about how winning and how much it meant to have his friends there supporting him in that way meant to him. And haven't had a good cry in a while. And that was good. It was a good episode. And I think that the whole episode sort of, and Dropout as a whole, shows consistently that entertainment can be more than just entertaining. Like, it can be used to help people who are in a rough spot. It can be a celebration of individuals, and also still be entertaining and fun or spectacular or whatever, right? And one of the reasons I think Jacob Waisaki has become such a fan favorite is he has proven himself time and again to be a good person. Like, there was another episode they did where they won money or something, and he took the money and donated it to a domestic violence nonprofit, and was also in honor of his mother, who had died recently, which is one of the reasons why they wanted to do this Who Wants to Be a Millionaire episode with him, is because they knew he had had a pretty rough year. He also had, I think, a friend of his in his like sketch comedy group die. So he had two deaths in a year, and Dropout just did a nice thing for him. They gave him they could have just given him $100,000. But they used it as an opportunity to showcase Jacob as a performer. And I think that that's great. I think that it's that radical kindness that we need to see more of in our entertainment and in the world. At the same time, no good deed goes undone. No good deed goes, what's the saying? Whatever. There were people that kind of had a problem with it. And this all kind of is a double-edged sword in the Dropout fandom that has created insane levels of parasocial relationships. Because there are some people that were like, did anybody else not find that episode that funny? Or, I don't know that he really deserved it. Did he really deserve it? The guy's mom just died. Give me $100,000. All I think too was, you know, they could have spent that money on a new show for their platform. Why didn't they do that instead? They gave it to this guy. And like those criticisms can fundamentally miss the point of the episode and of what like the ethos of Dropout is, I think, which is like, it's not just about spectacle, right? It's about care. It's that these people are friends as much as they are peers in this industry. It was a love letter to their friend dealing with grief and having a shitty year. Also, it doesn't matter if you feel like he didn't deserve it. Dropout and Sam Reich clearly felt like he deserved it. So what are we even doing? These comments, by the way, I found on the r/dropout sub, which, bro, what the fuck? Every fandom has these weird, weird parasocial investment lunatics. I mean, and this isn't even like the first time they've said weird shit about a cast member. They've like sexualized people on there and said creepy things about, especially the female or non-binary femme passing cast members. Don't do it. Don't do that. So yeah, I mean, it is a parasocial, or it's a double-edged sword for, you know, this parasocial relationships, because it cultivates that environment and fans, the ones that don't understand boundaries, feel like every, you know, win or every prize or every whatever the fuck is for them too. I mean, Jacob Waisaki did an interview after that episode aired, and he like talked about the danger of the position he's in, where like unearned affection from fans, like he's unable to like really process it and understand like, okay, what are the boundaries? Where are they? How blurry are we about to get? And it's the thing he said in that interview is the exact same thing that fucking happened after it came out. Why him and not me? Why him not me? But like the other thing too, the weird thing I don't understand about those criticisms is that this episode wasn't unique in singling out a cast member. They've dedicated episodes to other cast members and friends in the past, where it was rigged for them to win. So I don't understand why. And those episodes seem to have been received relatively more positively. I mean, it's probably also just like one or two really loud people that are like, did he really need $100,000? What's he going to do with it? If they're going to give him $100,000, I want to know what he did with it. Damn it. But like, dude, if you were in the same position and you worked at a company, or were, you know, in Sam Reich's shoes, where you had ultimate say over what you did with $100,000 LinkedIn sponsorship money, and you knew you had a friend who also like came up, like, wouldn't you want to do a good thing for somebody in need as well? Like, I just don't get where the criticism is coming. Like, wouldn't you also want to do this? It's just weird. While also, again, being entertaining and funny and heartwarming for an audience. Like, entertainment can be generous as well and still be enjoyable to consume. Especially in a market that is that demands engagement to an insufferable degree. Like Dropout has invested in that affection rather than squeezing you for every fucking penny like Netflix does, or YouTube Premium, or fucking name one, right? And you're still not fucking happy? Bro, insane. Insane behavior. Don't do this. It just feels like willfully ignorant to misinterpret or misread a fun celebration of an individual as a misuse of sponsorship money. The Dropout has been pretty fucking clear about the kind of company they are. You're surprised now? Fucking, how many years has it been since they launched Dropout? 2020, 2019? Bro, it's been 6 years of them doing this stuff. You're only now? Like, wait a second. Hang on. They're an empathetic company? Like, the other thing, too, is, like, Jacob was, like, his grief was... He put it out there, right? They didn't like try and coerce him into crying on stage and talking about all these very personal things. He volunteered that information, and in doing so was able to show that vulnerability like that is a strength. And I would also think that an audience as progressive as the Dropout fan base, that they'd be proud to see a streaming platform break from the old stereotype that to be funny means you need to be broken or depressed or fucking loaded in order to be successful. Isn't this the whole point of what we're trying to get away from as a culture? Shut up. Well, guys, I'm not going to answer any questions this episode because I just don't have time. I have to do other stuff. I slept in and it's fucking 3 o'clock now. I have not gotten as much done as I wanted to today, so I'm going to end this episode here. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, go subscribe to Dropout or find a friend that already has a subscription because they're okay with password sharing, which also makes them superior to every other platform out there right now. And subscribe to this channel. Also, you can go submit questions. I'll look at them for the next episode of this, or content or things that you want me to talk about. Advice I can give you, perhaps. None of it is real advice. And bye. Thanks so much for continuing to support me and the channel by watching these and my other videos. So see ya in the stars.